clear understanding of Four Noble Truths is the most significant feature in Buddhism, namely, realizations of the nature of suffering, cause of suffering, freedom of suffering, and the method to practice in order to achieve full freedom. Without developing our understanding on these four important factors, we can never realize the nature of our human problems, and forever we have to go on suffering, struggling for our survival, and yet never find the way to get rid of our unsatisfactoriness. This realization is the most important aspect in Buddhism. Those who are ignorant of these Four Noble Truths create their own conception of worldly problems. Buddhism is the only religion which gives a clear exposition of the Four Noble Truths. They are the absolute truths. That is why the Buddha says that these are noble truths, because many other concepts that we accept as truth never remain forever as truth. Those who try to understand these truths also naturally become noble. When we analyze these four kinds of truth, we can understand that suffering is nothing but our feeling of unsatisfactoriness of everything. The cause of it is natural, but not created by anybody. We know that in every existing element and energy, friction, clashes, imbalance, disagreement, and changes take place. When this situation is involved with human emotion, we experience this as unsatisfactoriness according to our unsatisfied desire. So, every moment we experience this state physically and mentally. Through scientific analysis also, this has been proved. That is why intellectuals say that Buddhism is a scientific religion. On the other hand, the main cause of existence as visible object is also caused by this friction. However, when the changes are not in our favor, then we experience unhappiness. It is called suffering. Now we can understand that suffering is natural. Therefore, our duty is to find out the cause of the suffering. The Buddha says, the cause is nothing but our own craving for existence and sense pleasures. Buddhists have no ground to believe that cause of it is our original sin. Nor do they believe that it is due to a curse or influence by any god, devil, or ghost. People experience suffering by developing their selfish desire and then experience worry, fear, and disappointment. By realizing this truth, they can get rid of their unhappiness only by reducing their craving. But they will never get the chance to avoid their suffering by feeding the craving or by adopting any other method. Complete freedom from birth, decay, worries, miseries, and unsatisfactoriness of everything to maintain peace, happiness, calmness and tranquility is called Nirvana. This is the final goal that the Buddha experienced and developed. It is impossible to gain this Nirvanic bliss by cherishing and entertaining our desire. After realizing the cause of suffering and the freedom that we can gain by eradicating this main cause, we have to find out the method practiced by the Buddha. This method or path is called the Eight Noble Paths. These Eight Noble Paths are for us to practice. Without practicing, no one can experience real bliss. They are right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. These noble methods we can find only in the Buddha's teaching. This method completely purifies the human life and enables us to be perfect and noble. There is no doubt about the difficulty that people have to face when they are going to practice this method. Yes, good things are difficult to practice, but bad things are very easy. Some people try to find out a simple and easy method to gain complete satisfaction in their life. But without following this path, whatever belief and concept they maintain as correct methods, they will never gain complete satisfaction or freedom in their life. This noble way of life is not only for those who profess Buddhism, but for all mankind. Cause and effect, or moral causation, is being introduced as kamma or karma in Buddhism. This is another important aspect for us to ponder in order to understand the cause of inequalities among the mankind. Our wholesome or unwholesome thoughts, words and actions create karma. Moral causality is another definition for karma. Whatever we do intentionally as volitional activities by influencing the mind, either with good thoughts or bad thoughts, create good or bad karma. These karmic forces create good and bad results, either within this lifetime or hereafter. This karmic law is a universal law, but not created by any external forces or God. Science says every action has its own reaction. This is another aspect in Buddhism to enlighten us to know as to how people experience discrimination or inequality physically and mentally. Buddhism never supports the belief that God and devil are responsible for our discrimination. Pleasant and unpleasant feelings are not created by a God as a reward or punishment, but follow as a natural effect of our own good and bad action. This is the nature of karma, or cause and effect, expounded by the Buddha. Everybody experiences the good and bad effects of their actions. Whether people believe it or not, no matter whether they profess a religion or not. To the Buddha, man is not an experiment in life created by a supernatural being to be done away with when unwanted. Buddhism is not a mumbo-jumbo business or cock and bull story to entertain human emotion or to pander to the human mind, but a rational, liberal, and noble method for those who have a mind to understand, practice, and experience. Buddhist cosmology explains how different kinds of living beings exist in different forms, visible or invisible, in other parts of the universe. Modern astronomy acknowledges this exposition. How rebirth is possible without the concept of an eternal soul is another religious revolution in Buddhism. All the other religions before or after the Buddha strongly uphold the belief in a soul, because without depending on a soul, there is nothing very much for them to talk about life hereafter. But Buddhism very clearly explains how rebirth can take place without the concept of a soul. According to Buddhism, belief in a soul is the misinterpretation or misunderstanding of human consciousness. To understand the Buddhist interpretation of rebirth, one must learn Buddhist psychology or the nature of mental faculties and the nature of the karmic forces and cosmic energy. Mere belief in rebirth never gives the clear picture of rebirth, reincarnation or transmigration of soul are not Buddhistic terms. Belief in a creator God is the most important concept to the followers of every religion other than Buddhism. To them, there is no religion without God, and no life without God. Although Buddhism does not deny the existence of such gods, the concept of God in Buddhism is entirely different from others. Buddhists work for their salvation by leading a noble religious life and through mental purification without depending on any God. Yet, they do respect God. Purity in Buddhism is not based on physical phenomenology, but psychological purity. Although others condemn Buddhists by calling names such as heathens, pagans, and idol worshippers, Buddhists never condemn the followers of other religions. While practicing their own religion, Buddhists can respect other religions. They can agree to disagree with other religionists to avoid conflict and hostility, and can compromise with them while upholding their own Buddhist concepts. So far, I have explained the fundamental teachings of Buddhism, its purpose, concept, method to be practiced, the ultimate goal of life as well as how to overcome difficulties, the Buddhist attitude towards various other sources, how intellectuals respect this profound teaching, and how narrow-minded people condemn this religion. The tolerance in Buddhism has been misused by many Buddhists to maintain certain meaningless traditional practices, so much so that non-Buddhists have come to regard Buddhism as a superstitious belief. Since Buddhism does not command people to do away with age-old traditions in order to practice this religion, people have taken advantage of this by following many kinds of practices which are not congenial to the teachings of the Buddha. In various countries where Buddhism spread, the followers have incorporated many of those existing practices into Buddhism and eventually introduced as Sri Lankan Buddhism, Thai Buddhism, Burmese Buddhism, Chinese Buddhism, Korean Buddhism, Japanese Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, and European Buddhism. But Christianity and Islam commanded their followers to do away with many of such former beliefs and minimize their traditional practices. On the other hand, the Buddhist attitude towards traditional practices, which are regarded as part of their culture, has become a stumbling block towards Buddhist unity and also created a superiority feeling which led to discrimination among the followers of Buddhism in their respective countries. At the same time, each group tried to glorify that their form of Buddhism is far superior to the others. But they do not realize that they are exposing their own egoism in the name of Buddhism. However, the remarkable Buddhist tolerance contributed to the maintenance of peace, healthy religious atmosphere amongst the different other religious groups and various denominations of the same Buddhist group without any bloodshed for the last 2,500 years is highly commendable. At the beginning, different schools of Buddhism sprang up due to different opinions they held regarding certain aspects of Buddha's teaching, but not for their personal gain or power, nor with any ulterior motive. Later on, the followers changed this attitude, and it seems today they are trying to introduce their own Buddhism with some ulterior motive. The Buddha's message, which we introduce as Buddhism, is meant for all mankind and not for one particular country. If people can understand this, there is nothing for them to talk about Chinese Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, or any other kind of Buddhism, because Buddhism means truth. If it is so, one particular group cannot monopolize the truth. Regarding our traditions and customs, the Buddha's advice was neither to accept nor to reject without considering. whether or not such practices are meaningful or useful to all concerned. To introduce our own tradition and customs through Buddhism, we should not brand Buddhism by using the name of our respective countries, which can create disharmony and misunderstanding. In order to reinforce their own Buddhist labels, they also have incorporated many kinds of magical powers, mystical powers, and supernatural powers by introducing charms and many other sources to influence the ordinary masses by disregarding what the Buddha has said with regard to such practices. They emphasize more on these practices and introduce them as Buddhism. They also try to create more confidence in the mind of others by saying that the Buddha had revealed those practices secretly to some of his disciples. But before his passing away, the Buddha had proclaimed that there were no secret doctrine in his teaching, and that he had revealed all the important guidelines to lead a proper noble religious life. Therefore, such practices are not prescribed in the original Pali Tripitaka. In this way, they have neglected intellectual and spiritual development in Buddhism. They realize that it is only through these practices they can gain more popularity. Some others try to accommodate all those different kinds of belief and practices to show others that they are working for religious harmony amongst the different schools of Buddhism. However, it can hardly be said that their motive is to promote harmony. If they were to practice Buddhism in that way, it is difficult to understand what they are trying to introduce as the basic teaching or the absolute truth of the master. However, that is not the correct attitude to show tolerance towards the other schools of Buddhism. One must have his own principles according to his own conviction by following the guidelines given by the Buddha. We can practice Buddhism according to our education and understanding without showing any hostility towards other schools or other religions. Those who try to introduce all the other traditions, beliefs and customs as practiced or adapted in different countries are like those who are trying to take different kinds of medicine, such as Western medicine, Indian medicine, Chinese medicine and other native medicine together when they are sick. Instead of getting cured, such attitude can aggravate the sickness. That is why we must have a method to practice Buddhism with confidence. In a country like Malaysia, people are facing another problem when they are going to practice this religion. Some of those religious masters, preachers and gurus who come from other countries try to introduce Buddhism according to their own beliefs, traditions and customs and say that only their way of practice is more effective and purer than the others. While appreciating their services, we would like to mention that local people create a still more misunderstanding and confusion after listening to many of those visiting religious masters. This situation has created more confusion and has become a big problem, especially among the younger generation and the beginners to understand what Buddhism is. The best advice that we can give to avoid this conflict is to study the basic teaching of the Buddha before they attempt to follow those masters. On the other hand, Buddhism in Malaysia consists of many cultural, traditional, religious beliefs and practices. Elders pay more attention to their traditional practices, while Western-orientated young people try to learn the significance of such practices and to develop the intellectual aspect. At the same time, some others remain as free thinkers. Young Buddhists in this country have had no facilities to learn their religion even in Buddhist temples. Temple authorities maintain their temples only as places of worship, but not as a place to educate people. Those who had their education in missionary schools do not know how to appreciate Buddhism, because many of them were influenced by other religions through indoctrination. Some of those cultural practices have become a mockery in the eyes of those who are not familiar with Buddhist practices. Some others always condemn the Buddhist practice of paying homage to the Buddha in front of a Buddha image as mere idol worship. This is a very big issue to them, but they do not know the significance of paying respect to a master who had taught them how to lead a noble and religious life. They do not know how to appreciate the enlightenment, perfection, wisdom, sacredness, and the noble services rendered by the Buddha. That is why they bring forward this criticism to condemn the Buddhist attitude of keeping an image and paying respect. On the other hand, paying respect to an image is not an indispensable act in Buddhism. The Buddha image is not compulsory for a Buddhist to become a good Buddhist. This is only a devotional aspect. It is difficult to understand why others take advantage of a statue to condemn a gentle religion. However, when we observe the way how some of our Buddhists practice this religion, it is difficult to say that they are not idol worshippers, because they have developed only the idol worshipping as the most important aspect in Buddhism. Through their human emotion and devotion, they developed some superstitious belief and started to erect various kind of images according to their mythological belief by depicting many faces, many hands, many eyes, and many heads to satisfy their imaginations and their worldly needs. That is why today we can see various shapes of images with disfigured features. All these images depict the poor mental attitude of those who introduced such Buddha images. The time has come for people to minimize the number of such images and to keep a normal image of the Buddha, for them to recall the Buddha and pay respect to maintain the good name of Buddhism. We can introduce Buddhism through our culture, but one should not introduce culture as Buddhism. Another big problem is the performance of rites and rituals by different ethnic groups according to their age-old traditions while practicing Buddhism as their religion. There is no doubt that some of those practices are insignificant in modern society and modern education. Many people are not ready to appreciate some of those practices. This we can see during the Chinese funeral and some other ceremonies which they perform a few days after the funeral by spending a few $1,000s. Many people mistake or misinterpret these practices as a part of Buddhist practices. Having seen such ceremonies, certain unscrupulous missionaries take advantage of the situation to ridicule and condemn Buddhism and so indoctrinate people to convert them into their religion. Therefore, those who are very keen to perform such ceremonies as their cultural practices may do so without creating the wrong impression among the public, which can cause much damage to Buddhism. The Buddha never advocated any rites and rituals, but disseminated the Dhamma or reality in life. Neither did he even ask his followers to worship him by erecting images. But the followers started erecting images of the Buddha only as a mark of respect. There is nothing wrong in it. The Buddha's advice was that those who see the Dhamma can see him. Those who serve Sikh serve him. Those who practice his teaching respect him. Some Buddhists try to introduce different Buddhas by using different names. They also emphasize and single out one particular name of a Buddha to inform others the power of their Buddha. To them, that particular Buddha is the true Buddha. This kind of attitude shows their poor mentality or ignorance. They discriminate Buddhas according to their way of thinking and personal needs by judging the validity of a Buddha in a worldly sense. Whatever names people use to introduce the Buddha according to their needs, the enlightened Buddha who appeared on this earth from time to time had no discrimination whatsoever. All of them gained the same enlightenment, the same perfection, and had expounded the same doctrine. Such Buddhas are very rare. But people create different names of Buddhas from time to time and introduce them as real Buddhas. Today, it has become a competition among the Buddhist community since they have commercialized the images of the Buddha. Buddhist publications themselves create another problem. Numerous books and booklets have been published and distributed as Buddhist literature in many parts of the world. But very unfortunately, it is hard to say whether any real teachings of the Buddha are contained in those publications. Through these publications, they create more superstitious belief and confusion. Some writers try to show their scholarship by touching upon various speculative issues according to different schools of Buddhism and ridicule the other schools and attempt to show the superiority of their own school. But unbiased readers may think that they are unscrupulous intellectual fools who create more confusion among the public. If the knowledge of the basic teachings of the Buddha is shallow, the readers may lose confidence in Buddhism after reading such publications. Some others have commercialized such publications for their personal gain, but never think of the damages that they create by encouraging to mislead people in the name of Buddhism. Buddhism was originated in India, and Buddhist practices were nurtured according to Indian traditions and culture. It is only natural, but the Dhamma, or the sublime teaching that the Buddha had expounded, is not confined to Indian community, but for all mankind. He had given all the necessary advice to guide mankind into leading a noble way of life without any frontier. In his teaching, the Buddha discussed all the existing human problems and how to overcome them to maintain peace and happiness. Some people try to condemn Buddhism as an outdated, impractical, and old-fashioned religion. There is no time limit for the Dhamma taught by the Buddha. Hence, the Dhamma will remain forever as truth. Dhamma is eternal, but the practices in the name of Buddhism are changeable from time to time. Buddhism is not a theory or mythology just to believe in, but a practical and noble religious way of life. This is one of the oldest religions in human history that cultured mankind, yet most modern in every aspect when compared with other modern achievements. This religion teaches us how to cultivate our own hidden potential and use our own effort and intelligence for higher achievement or aim of life. Buddhism is a religion to understand by a thinking mind. What is the purpose of professing Buddhism if we are unable to practice it in our daily life? We must uphold our religious principles, the Buddha's message of non-violence and peace, of love and compassion, of tolerance and understanding, of truth and wisdom, of respect and regard for all life of freedom from selfishness, hatred and violence delivered over 2,500 years ago stand forever as truth. It is an eternal message. Unfortunately, many of those so-called followers of the Buddha are unworthy descendants of that great master. He was a teacher who was superior and much ahead of his time. He was a master who taught us what we should do if we want to recover our balance, our harmony, our love and friendship. We have broken up into different sects, into different communities, into different nations, and we fight and destroy one another. We are in a world torn by strife and hatred. What did the Buddha say to such people? Overcome anger by non-anger. Overcome hatred by love. Can we do it? Are we practicing the advice given by him? If a man does not practice it, he is unworthy to call himself a follower of the Buddha. According to the Buddha, those who follow such advice are his real followers. Simply by worshipping or praying to the Buddha, one cannot become a real follower. We must develop the Bodhi heart of wisdom, a heart of love, a heart of understanding. If we are to so develop ourselves, then we should be contributing our share to make the world a better place for all of us to live. It is said that although the Buddha's teachings are more than capable of maintaining real peace and happiness, certain Buddhist states are still unable to work together in concert and in harmony. We are responsible for everything. We have to cleanse our hearts, scrutinize our own nature, and determine ourselves to practice and uphold the Buddha's noble teaching, both in spirit and the letter. We should make ourselves true Buddhists. Then the world will be a better place to live in. So this is not a religion for people just to follow, but to learn, understand, and to practice to gain experience.